about the tales of the internet. Of the Tales of the Unexpected Tales podcast.
Right, everything seems to be working, Damo.
Yeah, I'm all the way up to 11 here, so I'm sorted.
You know what? Let's start talking, okay? Because I don't know if we ever really did manage to crack the how to do an intro thing.
No. But you always did it perfectly, in my view, because you were just, it was mid-conversation. So,
well,
we didn't know what you were talking about initially.
No, and we didn't, we've just had a conversation, haven't we?
Yes.
Do you know, we were sort of like just catching up a little bit, and we'll tell everybody why we're here in a sec, but when I last spoke to you, I had a camera up my arse at that point.
Well, not while you were talking to me, thankfully. but you did mention it.
Because it's been a gap of health scares. Mm. So I've mentioned about Rob and our situation here. But what happened to me was I was watching the Ryder Cup 2 years ago, and I was preparing for, I had to fast. And I had to drink this stuff that made me go, right, to empty me out, right? And so it was the most uncomfortable period of time because, I don't know if you remember this, but Europe lost ridiculously. So I was laying in bed. I was watching the golf.
That's the golfing team in Europe, not the rock band.
That's right, yeah. And anyway, the upside of this is that everything's now fine. I'm all good. But I don't know what that was going. I don't know what was going on. But I did have an interesting view into my colon. Is everything all right with you?
Everything's good with me. As far as the colon goes, as well, no complaints. Well, I'm sure if you spoke to my wife, she'd say differently. But no, I feel, you know, the back is so much better now.
Yes.
To the point that I must have been a real wine bag at the time to everyone around me, but, you know. No, everything's good.
The last time you and I spoke, we did the episode, was it the Black Mirror episode or was it Up the River?
I think it was Up the River, yeah.
Was it? Right, okay.
Up the River and Down the Colon. With Jim Davidson.
Oh, this was something, he had a program, up the elephant
castles, wasn't it?
Up the elephant round the castle.
Yeah. A long time ago, when you thought Jim Davidson was all right. But anyway.
But it's a bit like Savile in that respect, because even though you had note to base it on, you knew we were wrong.
Yeah. He'd probably argue that he's not as bad as Savile, but, you know, that's not a good defence. I'm not as bad as Savile.
But it would win an argument. I mean, because
it would, yeah.
But it doesn't give you much of a measuring stick. So we did the one about that. It was a kind of special, and then we had a bit of a gap again, and then we did another. It was either Black Mirror or Up the Castle. No, Up the River Bend. Yes. Round. All of these things, and then it went kind of silent from our side of things.
Yes.
So
yeah.
The plan was always to do season six. But we had to kind of like work out where the priorities were and what we were going to do and all that sort of stuff. So what we've decided is we are going to do season six, but first of all, to get us into swing, to get us chattering again, we're going to do this, a horror anthology movie from,
yes.
I've got a date on here somewhere. 65, is that right?
65 is, it sounds good to me, yeah.
So what's the link? Why this? Well, this is one of those things that I remember little bits of when I was a kid that I still take with me now. It's just like Toto. Yeah. But also the fact that it is different stories that you hear and they're on that kind of horror chiller side of things. The difference between these ones, and there was loads of them made by, well, I had it in my head that they were mainly Hammer horror, but it doesn't.
This is Amicus.
Yeah, it feels like most of them were Amicus or another one, like an American company. Mm. Anyway, so there's these kind of stories that you take with you and stuff. And then the difference, the other difference is that these are connected by some sort of tailbone story that keeps them all lined up. Have I missed anything?
The other thing that I thought of was, there's a lot of online, TV nostalgia, Facebook groups.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Threads on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. And the thing that when people mention something, whether it's this, Toto, Twilight Zone, whatever, people always mix up what show they were watching at the time. Like the classic one is, I think it's on YouTube, it's your man that hangs around with, or did hang around with Ricky Gervais, the Carl Pilkington, he's telling the story about remember the one where the woman, this was an Alfred Hitchcock's Presents, but the lads were convinced that it was a Toto, where she was in a prison and she tried to escape through a coffin, but then the coffin got buried as coffins.
That's right, yeah.
And that was the twist at the end. Sorry if I've spoiled that for anyone who hasn't seen this 40-year-old episode of Alfred Hitchcock's Presents. But people always seem to mix these up. And 90% of the time, they all say it was a Tales of the Unexpected, because that's the most catchy name for anthology stories, I think.
Yeah, anyway. And it was the one that everybody remembers, like you say, that twist at the end. Now, these stories that we're about to go through here, they have that same thing where you're watching it for a few minutes and then it goes pow into this direction that you might have suspected it, but.
They don't advertise them as having twists in the tale, actually. But,
and this is the thing that what we always found with Tales of the Unexpected was, and what the bit I love was, we know there's a twist coming, right? We do know, because that's the kind of format of it. Yeah. However, it keeps you guessing. Now, what we're going to do in a sec, we'll go through this whole thing, but the one thing you can guarantee is that it's going to be a twist, just like a Toto. They're crackers. Yeah. But what we love about these is how wonderfully they've aged.
Anyone that loves Toto or any sort of light, I say light, I mean, there's people being murdered and whatnot.
Of course, but,
short stories, if you like, that have either a twist in them or just send a shiver down the spine.
Yes!
They're going to love this, and they're probably going to remember these as much as they did Toto, really.
And we remember when it was Roald Dahl's Tales of the Unexpected, and you and I were talking in the week about how Roald Dahl was just sat there working out how to kill people, but then writing about a chocolate factory. And I'm sure that he hated kids. I'm sure I've got that right. That's a callback to something I said a long time ago. Right, okay, so first things first. The film that we're going to talk about is called Dr. Terror's House of Horrors. Now, oddly, that title is completely explained, right?
Mm.
But it doesn't feel like it's about to be explained. And it's sort of halfway. No. It's in that intro bit.
It's very subtle.
Yes.
It's very subtle how it is explained.
And annoyingly, it's clever.
Yeah,
because
more clever than you would have expected for something around this time.
Yeah, and we when we were messaging, we were saying that this should really be called, Dr. Terror's Train of Terrors, that's what you
Dr. Horror's Train of Terrors.
That's
maybe?
because they're on it. It's about being on a train journey, but no, it's a bit different to that. And actually, when I rewatched this. And I heard it, and I was, oh, damn, that's really clever. I didn't expect that to... I wasn't expecting it to be clever. So this is, Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, and it's, again, like what we said earlier, this is like one that I remember bits of, because around that time there were a few. There was this one. There was The House That Dripped Blood, which is another one. There was Tales of Terror. There was...
Asylum,
that's the one, and Tales from the Crypt, those sorts of things. They always have this, they started with here's why we're here, then they tell the stories, and at the end, and I think I was trying to explain this, maybe it was to you, damn it, I was trying to explain You know those films where a bunch of people meet in the dentist waiting room and they explain the reason why they're there, and at the end it turns out the dentist is the devil and he kind of like, you know, he stabs you to death. And it's a bit like that, where the ending kind of wraps it all up.
It's a format that's been used an awful lot, and this is probably one of the first times it was used.
Yeah. And this,
I would imagine,
this was a guy called Freddie Francis who either created or directed. And if you look at what else he did, he is kind of responsible for some crackers. Like you'll notice on his Wikipedia page, Torture Garden, which I watched the other day as well. But they all also contain the similar sort of people as well.
They definitely do. Yeah.
Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, others.
I mean, I wouldn't like to say Christopher Lee was typecast for a long time, but I think he was typecast. Yeah,
he was.
He did about 10 Dracula films apart from Ending, but he was also like The Mummy, Frankenstein.
He was, yeah.
He did them all.
Yeah, and he was also, if he wasn't in makeup, he played an arsehole. And he's an arsehole in this. Right, okay.
Well, he is brilliant. The fact that he can, I mean, we'll probably get to him when we get to his story.
But, yeah, exactly.
I mean, he had some kind of renaissance with you know, Lord of the Rings and that.
That's right.
Years after all these. So.
Yeah, but he was...
Some career, some life.
He was Dracula in Lord of the Rings as well, wasn't he? Let's face it. Like,
more or less, yeah.
So it starts off with what I really like about films is having all of the credits right at the top. There's something just amazing about that. It's Amicus and Regal Films, and then you get this amazing oboe playing. And this is one of those things that we really enjoy from Tales Unexpected, was the music. And you can just, you already know now, if there's an oboe, it means it's bad news.
And, not a hobo, an oboe.
Yeah, or a hobo playing an oboe.
Yeah, hobos can be bad news sometimes, but some of them are also nice.
Yeah.
Let's point that out.
Now then, it says here, it goes through the cast list, and then it says, and Peter Cushing as Dr. Terror. And that immediately makes you think... what's the starting salary for a Dr. Terror? What skills do you have to have? Is there a university that you need to train at?
Well, if there is, he definitely robbed the skeleton from the science lab at the end. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, he didn't bring the animatronics with him. That's for sure.
No.
And then I noticed in the credits, songs by Kenny Lynch. Now, I think they're the songs that you hear by Kenny Lynch.
That he's actually singing, I presume, yeah.
And the ones that he's also singing on a stage. So I thought that was now in retrospect, that was far-fetched to say that songs included, it's like there's two. Anyway, we'll get to his story later.
I can only imagine that he was kind of popular at the time, so they, you know, obviously if he had songs in it, he deserves to be credited, but you know, I think both him and Roy Castle were possibly hired as much for their musical skills as they were for their acting skills.
They were like TV or film royalty at the time, sort of.
Yeah,
they have to be in these things. I don't know, I mean, that is a name, Kenny Lynch, which I imagine he'd have been hanging around with
there
Jimmy
was.
Tarbuck. Have I got that right?
I actually thought, I looked him up and I was convinced he was in that Comedians, you know, the 70s stand-up show with Frank Carson and Tarbuck and all them. But he actually wasn't, or at least he's not credited as being on it, which I found strange.
So that is interesting, because now I've got it wrong, because I thought there was a black fella on that show and that...
I came across him. I'm not sure. Can't remember his name now.
But it'd be like,
There definitely was. Yeah. And I seen, you know, again, one of these TV nostalgia shows on Channel 4 or whatever. And they were talking about that guy, saying that he used to take the piss out of himself in that he would tell racist jokes about himself.
So it made it all okay.
That he was accepted into the circle then, which is terrible when you think about it. But, you know.
I'm going to
kind of considered a pioneer of black entertainers on British TV because of it.
So. I can see his face now. And again, if it's not Kenny Lynch, was his name Charlie? Charlie something?
Yeah, it was.
Charlie.
I only looked him up the other day and I've forgotten his name, but I think it was Charlie something.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, and as you say, the Royal Castle's in this. We've got Lee Cushing. A young Donald Sutherland with a really lovely, long, thin face. This might have been one of his first things, to be honest, because...
It must have been. And the fact that, like, I mean, he's American, so...
Yeah.
Popped over to do this.
Usually
it's the other way around. It's the Brits heading over there to get a bit of work.
That's right.
Mainly in horror films, but...
And his story, we come to his... No, let's say it now. His story... is set in America, but actually it's clearly filmed in as with the West Indies storyline as well as
a soundstage in England somewhere.
Yeah, Pinewood. Okay, now so that's it. It starts and you hear we're on a train station platform thing. It's that one of them old ones with the overhanging bit. So it's like York or. Leads to me. What would be nearest to you?
For Euston Station in Dublin isn't unlike this one either.
Yeah, it's that.
It's probably a little bit smaller, but it's definitely old style.
Yeah, old style.
Station, yeah,
huge, huge, lofty building. It's that. It's it looks ace. Like this, they've picked the right place.
Yeah.
And then it took me some time to work out where this was based, and I couldn't quite hear where they were setting off from, but I don't know if it was a made up place or not. You see,
the place they're going to, Bradley, is that exists.
So Bradley is where they're going to, but I couldn't hear where they were setting off from. But it's 7:55 and it's dark, so this must be filmed like in the winter, or was set in the winter. Yeah.
Either way, yeah. But the other side of it, I mean, we'll get to the whole. Meaning and theme of it, I suppose, by the end. But are they really there?
Are they really there? I do get you. Yeah.
Is it from the start? Is it something else? And the other thing I noticed is, other than the bloke that's punching the tickets, there's nobody else at that train station.
No, I tell you who is at the train station, though. There is, you don't see them, I should say, but you see a sign for a barber's. Actually, on the plaque, it just says barber's, like an arrow pointing to it. This is a strange one. I just thought... You're late for a business meeting. It's all right. I'll get a haircut before I get on the train. And there's one right there. Like, I wonder if that was popular in the olden days.
Yeah, probably was. It's probably a good spot to put one. They probably had one of those guys that polishes the shoes as well. And
I've got a friend who's a bit of an expert on like trains and stuff like that, especially from. The olden days. I'm going to ask him. I'm going to ask him if he gets his hair cut at station. Or no, that's probably the wrong question. More, was this a thing? Right. Okay. And then you're right. There was this guy who's punching tickets. Did you see his face?
I don't remember seeing him. If it did, it was only a side view.
It was a side view, but he was really grumpy. So now I'm thinking with what you've said just about. The setting is he like what's that guy who controls the no let's not because just in case anybody wants to keep this a secret so you got a bloke who I don't recognize. He's either a Scottish man or doing a Scottish accent, and he kind of gets his ticket punched and walks into the train, and it's nice actually because it immediately sets the scene of they're choosing this carriage that they end up in by chance. They've not got seats booked, but they're finding a free place. So he sees that, and I really like these trains. What I think a better train would be on one side. There's a corridor that runs down, so you can. But I still quite like the carriagey things. Mm. He's not the first one on, though, is he?
I think. Alan Freeman's already sitting in there, is he?
That's right, Fluff.
He says, yeah, there's a spot in here.
That's right, Fluff is... That's what his name was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Fluff is for those who don't know, I'm sure, I reckon every regular to this podcast, who probably isn't a regular anymore, but every once upon a time regular would know this guy as being Radio 1 / 2 DJ. And he was like, he was classic, all right, pop pickers, it's the...
He was. He's one of the direct inspirations for Smashy and Nicey.
Has to be, yeah. Has to be.
Him and Blackburn.
Yeah, him and Tony Black. I actually, have you seen that program with Paul Whitehouse and Bob Mortimer, the fishing one?
Yes. Yeah.
So Bob's asking Paul, what's the character that people make you want to do? Like do him for us, and he says it's Smashy. And then he says, which is the character that you said was terrible? And so and Bob's like, did I? And so he goes, yeah, I did this thing and you said that's a rubbish character. Don't ever do that again. And he goes, and I use that hatred to hone who we all know and love now. But he's really pop pickers. This is the this is the pops.
And also absolutely no charges against this man historically, which is unusual for a DJ of that time.
Yeah, so far. But I imagine, even... so far. Well, yeah. Is there the sort of radio DJ that would be very aged? He'd be like 70 years old and he'd still wear like an American high school jacket. Do you know what I mean? Like a silky... I don't know what you call them. Yeah. Like jock jackets.
Yes, yeah. Mm. With Forbidden Planet on the back.
Yeah. Anyway, I tell you what else is. And look, I'm not making any accusations here, right? That's not for me to do. That's for others to do, not for me. But he's staring at a child's doll.
At the time, it was perfectly innocent.
Absolutely. And when the guy gets on, the Scottish guy, who I still don't know his name, so apologies for that.
No, and I didn't take it down either. He's the one bloke in this carriage who I didn't recognise.
No, that's right. Isn't that weird? What if these were all up-and-coming actors? And they went, this is your show, this is your starting stage, guys. And I've just looked up his name, it's Neil McCallum. So he is probably Scottish, actually. And he didn't make it. He just didn't, something's burnt.
No, if I remember looking him up, going down the IMDb rabbit hole, wizard sleeve, whatever you want to call it, he did the voice of one of the Thunderbirds, which is probably a very good gig at the time.
I imagine so,
yeah,
that's really good.
Don't ask me which one, but
no. We're 20 minutes in. We've only got two people on train here. Who else gets
on? It's a train. It's gonna be late. Yeah. Even one that's going to hell. Oh, spoiler! Sorry, ignore that.
Or Bradley. Yeah, that's going to Bradley.
Well, same thing some people would say. And I say that as a man who asked if Bradley was a real place 5 minutes ago.
So yeah.
No offence, Bradley.
I'm going to get on Google Earth and have a look in a sec. Right, so I can't remember the order of the next things happening. Is it Roy Castle gets on next, probably?
Yeah, he's the real cheerful chappy. And he gets his finger caught in the puncher at the station off the socks.
Yeah.
And he gets on. Actually, does Christopher Lee get on before him? Hey. I know Christopher Lee is even more grumpy than the ticket puncher.
That's right, yeah. So we've got Roy... I've written this down in... I didn't say the order necessarily, but I've got Roy Castle gets his finger clipped, whistling, finds a carriage. And this is the point where now I was like, so they're not booked on this. They've got the ticket for the train, but this randomly selecting this carriage is like part of the mystery, I suppose. Yeah. Then Dracula gets on, and I wondered, you might already know this, had Christopher Lee been Dracula before this film?
Yes. The first Dracula, I think, was either 58 or 59, so it was a few years before this. But he ended up doing, I think he did most of them in the 70s in the end, but he did about 10 of them. But I couldn't help feeling that they were playing up to that fact a little bit, that he was Dracula, i.e. he's grumpy sod getting on here and the others are a little bit afraid of him.
Yeah, good-looking grumpy. That's what Dracula is, isn't he? Well, this wasn't Hammer, of course, so it's not even an in-joke. Something else.
Not an in-joke, but I mean, probably an obvious joke to make at the time.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And this, on the same token, the fact that Roy Castle is such a cheerful bloke, and, yeah. You know, they're almost playing their themselves, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. And then Donald Sutherland comes on. So he's right. Long in the face. I think it's just because he's got a long face. Finally gets on with his own oboe accompaniment is Dr. Terror. But he's not introduced as Dr. Terror at this stage. Was there something strange about the way he decides to get on the train?
Well, he does a lot of leering through the window first, doesn't he? Just to really add to the effect. And,
yeah, he wipes away some of the steam or the smoke.
Yeah, he wrote something in it as well. You're all fucked or something. I don't know.
Then he wipes it off and leers through. Now, I thought this was going to probably come back in, but it doesn't. So, spoiler. His eyebrows and beard, he doesn't take them off and go, ha-ha, surprise.
Yeah, yeah.
They stay on. So it doesn't look right. He's got like a monobrow like Liam Gallagher and this
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly fake. And yeah, it's not a disguise. It's meant to be what he actually looks like. But I suppose ultimately it is a disguise.
Yeah. I suppose it is a disguise, yeah. I mean, he could do whatever he wants, really.
The other thing as well, just to point out, that this is probably the scariest thing about this whole film to me, was when I looked up Peter Cushing's age at the time, he was 5 years older than I am now.
Oh, no.
Which is ridiculous, because he's one of the oldest men that ever lived.
all times. So, right.
There's a lot of uncomfortable staring for a minute or so, you know, everyone's kind of sizing each other up, and
yeah, I like,
you know, there's a lot of
fluff sort of like smiles, just giving it's just about to introduce Bobby and the Dreamers or whatever their name was. So yeah, I wrote in here, I've just turned my page, it says checking each other out. So when this is Peter Cushing, and did he drop off at this stage? And
he does, yeah. He has a little power nap.
Yeah.
Because he's an old geezer, so he's bound to fall asleep at any given moment. And
this is the bit where it feels unsuspicious, like they're all in this together. There's clearly, unless you wanted to talk to Dr. Terror, hang on a minute. It does tell you his real name in a second. But yeah, if you want to talk to Dr. Terror, they could have just stayed silent. I mean, none of this film needed to happen. And that's what I think I'm trying to get to, because in my head, this was Dr. Terror comes onto the train and says, right, lads, let me tell you what's going to happen. But they don't. That none of this needed have happened.
Everything is made to look like it's by chance.
Yeah, exactly. But after he wakes up then, doesn't he? And then
falls off his lap,
And they're picking all of this stuff up off the floor, and one of the things that they pick up, he's got like documents and stuff, is a pack of cards. Now Roy Castle sort of says, that's a funny looking deck, man, how do you play poker with these?
He's got a lot of really crap jokes in this.
They're not even really jokes, are they? Because that's
not jokes. No,
that's actually a question.
He's saying man to everyone because he's in the jazz industry.
Oh, talking about jazz. Yeah, he is in the jazz industry. He's a musician. Have I shown you my bongos?
No. I was admiring your muffler, but I haven't seen your bongos.
I've got them out. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Right. So the one's bigger than the other. I don't know if you can see that.
I do see that, yeah.
But they're both.
They say that doesn't matter.
No, and that one's the lower one. But I'm just going to. I can pat them.
You can.
And I've got to.
Hopefully, the listeners have worked out that you are actually holding the musical instrument known as bongos. We're jumping ahead here, but don't attempt to do any voodoo tunes on that, please.
That is precisely the reason why I left them by my feet. I can leave my bongos by my feet. Now, let's have a look. So, he explains to them, they're tarot cards. And Now, on the bag, I think it says WRS. Now, that must be his like initials, because then there, I think they're saying sort of like, "What's your name?" I can't actually, you don't just go up to somebody and go, "What's your name?" So maybe you do. Maybe you do.
Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, he could have been just really mannerly and introduced himself once the conversation started. I'm not sure, but...
Yeah, my name is Dr. Shrek, he goes.
Yeah.
At which point you start looking at the titles of things and going, am I watching the right video here? Because I had to ask you, I was partway through my notes and I'm going, oh, shit. Because you'd...
Are we watching the wrong one?
Yeah, it's like this... There's a train involved in this, not a house. It's Dr. Shrek, not Dr. Terror. And you just go... Is this? Are we on the same page here? And we checked it. We checked at least twice between us.
Mm.
So,
and we definitely were. Thankfully,
definitely were. Right. Okay. So, what? Dr. Shrek is his name. Now, somebody points out that sounds a bit German.
Mm.
At which point he says, "Yeah, the rough translation of it would be Dr. Terror," but I wouldn't read too much into that. It's hard not to when you've got an oboe accompanying you every step.
And it's spelt, is it spelt differently to the way Shrek the Ogre spells Shrek?
Oh, yeah. It's more like shriek, isn't shriek. It? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's definitely, I think the C makes it German.
Yeah. Shrek.
Yeah.
There's other things.
He's happy to be called Terror.
Yeah, there are other things that make him sound German, because when he's doing the tarot, he's explaining the tarot cards. He explains that you could do tarot reading on any one of us, so, which was one of Rob's favourite bits in that Hitler Toto episode.
I used to know the name of that, and I can't remember it now.
What? The Genesis and Cyanide.
That's it. That's
Genesis and Cyanide.
Catastrophe, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Chaos and Catastrophe.
So he explains that there. This is where the title for the film is subtly explained.
Yes. That's, yeah, it is subtle. And that's the bit when he's talking about his tarot cards. He says, "These are my house of horrors." So we just go, Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, like everything's explained. So now it's all forgivable that you're on a train. It's all forgivable that there's only a few houses involved in this.
Yeah.
And it is a horror film, so we're all right. Well, from the start, Dracula is livid about this. Because what he's saying is, he's going, this is how they do it. They're confidence tricksters. Because he explains, you tap on the cards, and we'll draw four. That'll tell me your destiny, and then we'll see what the fifth card is. How to avoid that route. So it's one or other, right?
Yeah.
And
once you tap, that con man has your bank account details. it's over.
Yeah, he's scanned your switch card. Now. This is when Dracula calls it, it's part of the lunatic fringe.
Yeah.
And I really like that, because I think there should be a lunatic fringe. It would be different to Edinburgh, but but like it goes on for 3 weeks instead of four, and it's just got lunatics. Just
Is that not Glastonbury now?
It
or
would
you
be.
Could have a haircut called the Lunatic Fringe. We couldn't have it, but...
No, we could be, yeah.
You could go into a barber's, the barber's at the train station and say, Lunatic Fringe, please. I've got to be in Bradley in an hour.
Yeah, that's... I love that, yeah. Now, then there's a pigeon joke I've written here, but I can't...
I have that down as well. I just have Roy Castle's pigeon joke.
What's the pigeon joke?
Something about...
Not because they're saying they don't believe in all of this.
Yeah.
Hokum.
And he says, oh, I met a woman once who told me I was in for a surprise and she was right, a pigeon flew over my head. And that's all he says. And they all crack up apart from Christopher Lee.
Because...
Even Dr. Terror has a chuckle at it, I think.
So, because he doesn't say that it shat on him. He just says, I walked underneath one. I mean, that's classic Roy, isn't it, really?
Mm.
So anyway, so it's I think there's enough kind of here to let the Scottish guy go, I don't mind doing this. I'll have a go.
I'm the least famous person in this carriage. I may as well go first.
So this is, he's kind of, because if you imagine that Christopher Lee is like towards the end, actually his story isn't last, is it? It's Donald Sutherland's.
Strange, I did find that strange.
Because maybe Donald Sutherland was the American, so the headline act, maybe they've said, yes, we can put him in your film. Yeah. He's an up-and-coming American guy, but he has to go headline act, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so he says, here's the Destiny card. So these are the four. You've got the... I can't remember what he says here. I've written it down, but I've...
Yeah, the cards kind of tell a little clue to the story that's coming.
I
did kind of lose interest as he got to number five. But this one definitely has somebody howling at the moon, so it gives you
an indication. What... Can't read my handwriting. I'm sure it says Charlotte. Chariot.
Chariot,
it does say chariot because... And the only thing I can think about is how he gets to the house. It's on it's on a horse-drawn thing. High Priestess, a moon, and an enchantress, right? And then the fifth card is revealed when we finish the story. So this is it. Yeah. This is the story. This is... werewolf.
Yes.
I think this is...
So he's an architect.
Yeah, this is probably... it's a stab in the dark. It's going to be about a werewolf, this one.
Unless it's a clever title, but we've already had that with the title of the film. We're not getting any more.
No, and this is the thing, is that actually this might be a nice payoff towards the end, had werewolf not been revealed. So I've either looked too far into the future on this, or the episode titles weren't readily available at the time. I'm looking at the original poster, and it doesn't sort of say featuring classic stories like The Werewolf. Or...
No, it doesn't go for that at all.
So anyway, yeah, as you say, he's an architect, and he's heading to an island in the Hebrides,
which is revealed to be it was his actual old house. Yeah. It was his old family home for years.
But he was broke, needed to sell it, so he did. Now he's an architect, and he's doing well for himself. But there is another family that now live there. But he sort of knows them because. When he was there, they must have been the next family that moved in. So the part of the track, I guess that's
the groundskeeper guy who he meets first, who's quite friendly at first. He seems to remember him. So I don't know if he was the groundskeeper when he was there or what.
And all I have his name is Grandad. That's all I put.
I think it was Caleb, but I didn't write. I keep writing groundskeeper, you know, shorthand.
He arrives in this horse-drawn carriage, gets out, and then through the shrubbery, Grandad is looking on, leering. And the other thing as well is before this happens, by the way, there is a little bit of a setup, which is he's going there to do some renovations, and so they need the architect to go and make sure that they can do this. And sort of when they're talking about, I'm not too fussed about going to Hebrides actually. And then the guy who like owns the architect firm says, "Go on, she's a lonely widow," and he sort of insinuates that he could probably get his end away and get. I don't know what he.
Yeah, it was. Now that you mention it was a bit unprofessional.
A little bit, yeah. Anyway, I should tell you as well. We don't see this at the time, but Grandad is also carrying a scythe with it, like a mini scythe, and that would have shat me. Like even if I knew him as Grandad, stuff can happen.
Yeah, emerging from the shrubbery, as you say. I mean, it makes sense he'd be in there with some sort of garden tool, but
yeah. He rings the doorbell thing, and then a creepy girl answers. We get her name in a bit. It's
Valda, apparently.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a Scottish name. Am I totally wrong there?
No, it could be Icelandic. So this is one of Rob's things. We would write down the name in different ways throughout. And that's exactly what my notes have done. I've called him Valda, Velma. Oh, sorry, her. It's her, Velma. Then Vera I went to in the end. So I'll try and remember it.
I did do that for the lady of the house who we're about to meet. I called her Mrs. Werewolf. Again, I'm spoiling things. I'm sorry.
So
I thought it was catchy.
What she's saying is, and there is a little confusion later on, but is right to be confused. She says, I want to knock this fireplace down and open up this thing like a ballroom. Now, he says, oh, so you're going to like have a ball? This is later on. He goes, are you going to have a ballroom and stuff? And she goes, no, I want it like a ballroom. But I don't understand why. He's right to be confused about why she said what she said. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we know we find out that why she's kind of talking arse, but yeah, for him. But he doesn't seem too bothered. As you say, he's here to get his end away. That's the that's the main reason. Now, so.
It all seems legit, is what I've put in my notes.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting paid either way, so she can talk away.
Well, he's going to assess what he needs to do, and she says, whilst you're doing that, I'm going to nip down into the village. I'll give you about 2 hours. And then the creepy girl comes back in. And I still don't think she speaks at this point. She's just doing
a lot of peering around doorways and corners. Yeah.
I usually might write the person's name and then what they say. But this woman, I've just got her down as creepy girl, and I move on to my next note.
She doesn't say anything. And I suppose that's a clever setup because it's a bit of not a red herring. She is, I suppose, a little bit important to the story, but she's not what she seems, basically.
No, that's right. Later on, when they're back and he's kind of all dressed up for dinner, they talk about the fact that this room is going to be a specimen gallery. Now, I was going to. Here, I've got one. These sorts of things, you know, you've seen these when you have to take a sample to the doctors. That's a specimen, right? And so all I could imagine was rows and rows of shit and piss in in bottles.
So it's like a hoarder's sitting room. It's going to be on one of those Channel 5 shows.
So with
I'm a hoarder and I'm married to a werewolf.
These things here, I needed to take a sample to the doctors a while ago. So I thought, oh, Amazon are bound to have sample pots because during the lockdown it was difficult to get anything done. So I ordered these, and I could only buy them in bags of 15. So I have the one that I have the one that I used. This was 2 years ago, and I've got 14 just empty around. I leave them around the house. Empty.
Well, that's handy.
Empty. This is my own specimen gallery. Now then, So whilst they're chatting, sort of like towards the end of this scene, you hear in the distance, oh.
You do.
Don't know if you could get that. Werewolves of London.
Warren Zevon is somewhere close by.
And so he goes, did you hear that? And she doesn't hear that, allegedly. Creepo walks down the stairs, though. So this is the girl. She's, again, sort of like suspiciously walking. He looks around. He looks around. And rather than involving the lady and saying, now, come here. Can you just come with me? He just goes to the door and just looks around and it looks like madness, but everything will be explained.
Are they trying to imply that it's the girl, who's howling and then?
Well, I'm going to into a little secret here. I this is how I remembered it. I remembered it as being it was the girl,
right? Yeah,
and the Velma, and she was acting all weird and shit because that's what werewolves would ultimately do. Anyway, I've written down here, granddad's not creepy at all. That I've written that in some sort of sarcastic font. So
yeah, well, I'd say he didn't start out, other than appearing from the bushes, he was quite friendly.
Yeah.
And your man knew him, so you kind of thought, okay, he's on his side, but he does get more cagey as it goes on.
Yeah, because will I wouldn't mind knowing how much does he actually know, or is he...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Whose side is he on, or is he just kind of, well, I'm getting paid here, I don't agree with what she's doing, but, you know, I'll keep me mouth shut.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I've been promised employment here regardless of who runs the house.
This isn't worth my salary. This is the reason why Grandad's back involved is because one of the things that I think have they got to work? They have, haven't they? They've got to work now on the, smashing some of the shit in. It is a one man construction team at the moment. So
yeah,
as he's going around the house and he's sort of assessing foundations and stuff. Let me get your thoughts on this. That they discover there's a door where I think he needs access to the what's behind this door.
Yeah.
And it's a cellar door. And it's been locked. Now, he obviously needs to get behind it. I'm struggling here because when he gets to they find a spare key and they open it, on the door, he kind of puts his hand on the side where it latches and he looks at his hand and then he says, this lock's been recently oiled. So I don't know what is he concluding?
Well, first of all, the fact that he decides straight away it's oil. I mean, if I put something, you know, my hand on something sticky around the doorway, you'd wince straight away and go, what the fuck is that?
But this is, I think what they're trying to do is say, nobody's been down that cellar in 7,000 years. But what they should have done was had a hidden door, right? Mm. So, and then gone, that's a really ancient door. And they go, no, look, that's recent oil. This is butter.
Yeah. They do it a little bit. A minute or so later with the recently plastered wall down in the cellar. So yeah, it's all...
And that's clever.
That this has been set up essentially.
I don't understand I think they just missed... And I think I know what they're getting at, but I think they missed an opportunity to sow that seed. Well, as you say, so he goes down. What's his name again? It's Jim. Jim goes down and then... He sees, like you said, this kind of plaster, but it looks like stone, but it isn't. It's plaster because he scrapes at it. He says, Grandad, can you come down here? And then...
Grandad.
was that character in Bread called Grandad? I want me pudding. As he goes, he smashes the wall. Bang, 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 bang. And when you see what's behind, what did you see behind it? Don't say what it is. What did you see?
To me, it looked like that alien that was in the news recently. You know, the one that was made of cake down in Mexico.
But it doesn't. It's just a face of something, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, no. I tell a lie. That's when he's in the coffin. That's what it looked like.
Oh no!
Like
yeah. It does. Yeah, alien. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a face.
It's just a face. It doesn't
kind of a gargoyle.
Yes, a gargoyle. You'd find them anywhere. This doesn't look like a coffin, right? But they immediately identify it as being a coffin. And Jim says, "Do you know about this coffin then?" Grandad is straight in with the backstory.
It's like he's reading off the Wikipedia page for this guy. Because he has all the two of them are bouncing back off each other going, yes, he was cursed, whatever, 7,000 years ago. And they both, like, fair enough, your man, Scotty, Jim, knows the backstory of the house he lived in.
Yeah.
But yeah, the two of them are just like, my God.
As soon as they introduce the fact that there's this kind of like backstory... they call it a legend, And then that's it. They keep referring to it as the legend. And when she comes in with her story about the legend later, it's great. Anyway, so it's time to open the coffin.
Hmm.
I wrote down here, is Dr. Terror reading this? Is he saying this out loud? And then you'll do this, and then you'll do this. And then Grandad will get his scythe out.
Yeah, he must be. Because, I mean, how else would they all in the carriage know?
Know what's going
to happen? They're not all staring, unless they're all staring into the tarot cards, which turn into a kind of an iPad.
if somebody says to you, though, you're on the train and somebody says, oh, that card there, that means that you're going to go to a house. This card here means you're going to meet the lady who lives there. This card here means that it's going to be a bit suspicious. This card here, werewolves. And it's just, is he going, just back up a minute. I'm with you up to a point. He needs something. So he's got in the... This time, fast forward in time a little bit, is kind of got the coffin out. It's out of the wall. It's somehow shifted it, or they've got access to it. And he says he needs some... I'm going to go and get me tools, he says, or something.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
The thing that I wondered at this stage was, if Scotty used to live in this house, and that's a new wall down in the cellar, what was down there before that new wall? You know, obviously, the Count Cosmo, as he's called, wasn't in there.
Yeah, we haven't done the backstory of the Cosmo.
No, we've not as much as Grandad did. That's so, for sure. Yeah.
So he says. In fact, what does he say? Because it's it changes.
Basically, that this was a count who used to own the house many hundreds of years ago. And lost it. He lost it to Scotty's family somehow.
And he says he's coming back.
Yeah. The legend is that he'd come back to reclaim the house or something.
And if... Presumably... Oh, no, it's later, isn't it? When they talk about the grave opening, the coffin opening. We'll come back to that then. But now... Yeah. So he goes out of the... So I'm off to get me tools. He goes out of the cellar, locks the door, click, click, you can hear that. Mm. And then the obligatory coffin lid opens up very slightly and a hand is pouring.
It's definitely some sort of monstrous hand, but it doesn't necessarily look like a werewolf's hand.
No, it doesn't. That's right.
It's not hairy.
No, it's it's also not human.
No, definitely not human.
It comes back. And when he gets to the cellar door, it's now fully open. Like, that's been open. So he's like, shit. So he's got the key for it. He looks at the key. Ah, damn. Right? He goes back down and he sees dog paws in the soil. A little bowl.
So definitely not the prints that hand would have made.
No, that's right. And there, a little chew. Pretend bone water bowl. So that's it. Now next, right? Now this lady turns back up on her bike, and there's a bit in the intro of Murder She Wrote where Jessica Fletcher is riding through Cabot Cove on her bike. That's what this bit reminded me of.
Yeah, like she's the lady of this massive mansion, whatever you want to call it, stately home, and I suppose, why not go around on your bike? We don't know how big this island is, but your man had to get a horse and carriage from the shore.
That's right, he did, didn't he? Yeah. When she gets home, the windows are open. And now that's not part of this story. It's weird. They could have made a bit more of that. But I think that's what she does, is she just walks out the window. Like, I don't mean like, you know, lifts up the thing and they're big window, French door window type things. But and then you hear and see actually a rustle in the not like Russell Grant, I mean like just a rustling. Imagine Russell Grant there with sort of introducing another tarot story to this.
Was it a Jack Russell that made those paw prints?
Now,
well, she's not bothered in the least, really, about all this, and obviously we learn why at the end. But it's a real she's happy-go-lucky, you know.
So she's not got a clue if anybody's been down there. She's like, I can't answer these questions. Grandad sort of like is stood in the background and when he's heard enough, he just shuts the door behind him and walks away. It's just really weird. He gets back to his room. This is later that night. And Valda, I've put, that's not a name though, is it? Verna? What's her name?
Valda is the
correct
Valda,
name. Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. She leaves a note. I must see you. I need to see you. So he's getting undressed now. He's only got so far undressed. It's like his shirt's opened. Now that remains in that way throughout the remainder of this section. And then you hear a dog barking. Like, it's not a wolf. It's definitely a dog that barks. And when they'll go outside, she's been... This is now Vera, now Valda. She is lying on floor. So a dog bark.
Yeah.
Knocked out or dead with what can only be described as red paint. So
yeah, I had down, it looks like radioactive baked bean juice.
It is, because it's not real. It's that we know why this wouldn't have looked like real blood. It needed to look like this, but that's never aged very well, has it?
It's got a tremendous orange glow off it.
Yeah. Well, he follows it like a trail, and when he gets down to the cellar, there's a green light down there with the green light that's just out of nowhere. But I think that insinuates evil. And then he opens the coffin up to see what's in there.
Yeah.
And something scratches him, but I don't know what. I didn't see it. He goes, ah!
Did he scratch?
Yeah, something goes, ah! So he goes, and he looks, and he's got like three little claw marks on his hand.
Yeah. And this is where we see the Mexican angel, just this dormant thing in the coffin.
Grandad brings Velma inside the house. She's kind of, I think she is dead. And then they talk about the legend again.
Yeah, that's his granddaughter, by the way, and that's the height of his grief. He's over. Yeah.
Yeah.
They raised him tough up in those Scottish islands, let me tell you.
This is the bit where so we've had a bit more about the legend, and then he needs to go and get his gun. He says, I'm going to get him a gun. Mm-hmm. This is one of the lines of the film here. He goes, something came out of that coffin tonight, something evil and strange. And I like the strange bit for no reason at all. Something evil and strange. Well, Vera is dead, it seems. That's a definite now. She is no more.
Yeah. And sorry, when they were talking about the legend of the Count, there was something about he's going to bump off whoever owns the house.
Ah, that's right. To claim the house, he's going to get rid of, as long as he can get out of this coffin. Now, interestingly, I'll come back to that in a second. He knows the only way to kill a werewolf. He's got this. He's been watching Hammer Horrors for years. Is to melt a sword into silver and then make bullets and just silver bullet this motherfucker. Now, here's the problem.
This was a legendary sword that Jim's ancestor used to kill the Count.
Yeah.
And then turned it into a crucifix to put over his mantle.
That's right. So he's
he's going to melt it down again.
Exactly.
If he knows it's a werewolf, why is he going on about something strange and evil coming out of the coffin? Just say it's a werewolf.
This is the point where you would say that legend, there might be something in this legend, actually.
Yeah.
If you were in this situation, do you have like a local forge in your basement or somewhere where you could melt metal over 900 degrees? I don't know what it takes to melt metal, but it's got...
Granddad can whip something up in his shed, I'm sure.
Somehow he's without even... So remember, he's in his shirt that's half undone and he melts down a sword... He melts down the crucifix, which was a sword.
Yeah.
And then he molds them into bullets on sight. And then finds the gun. There is a... I've written down here, as he goes down into the coffin room, a classic rat distraction. What have I written that for?
There is a rat in there, and for some reason he goes over to it and kind of... I wouldn't say he pets it, but it's like he's shooing it away or something. As you say, he's distracted ridiculously by this rodent.
In the meantime, the coffin has opened. It goes over to the open coffin, and I wrote down here, it looks like that Amazon packing paper. You know, it's like there's nobody else. There's nothing in it now, but it's just crumpled up brown paper that so it doesn't get like damaged in transit.
Well, and the other thing as well is, do werewolves go for a kip in coffins? That's vampires, isn't it?
Dracula's. All yeah. Dracula's. Well, there's an interesting camera angle here, but I don't know what it was. Knock, knock, knock. Oh, that's right. Sorry. The camera angle is over the lady of the house's shoulder. She is reading a Murder, She Wrote book. And
Woman's Weekly.
Yeah. Knock, knock, knock. She goes, she turns around, come in. And then we cut from that. We're somewhere else in the house and we hear a scream. Ah!
Yeah, yeah.
And then we see the man runs in and what can only be described as a wolf's mouth or like a dog's mouth.
It looked like a dog to me. It really did. It actually looked like, you know that dog in the memes, the Doog? Not like a little sweet husky. It was angry, but it wasn't an intimidating beast whatsoever.
It was. I don't even think it was showing its teeth. I just think it had its mouth open.
Yeah.
But you know it.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a big pile of sandwiches next to it as well. It's bad because it's there's green lighting around it.
Mm.
And then the man is charged in. Bang, 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 bang. He shoots six times.
Yeah.
And then, I've missed the fucker. Where is it? It's gone. Has it gone? Has it run off? Or...
Yeah, it runs out and it looks like it shuts the door behind it.
Yeah. So, that's right. It's like a supernatural door closing. And that's it.
He's gone. The count is gone from the story after that.
So yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm off into the shop for some ham. He goes, I can't understand this. I've just shot him six times with silver. And then she goes, do you mean these bullets? And brilliant camera angle. You just see her kind of with, she's pouring. She's out of her pores. Because they're now hairy hands, aren't they? She's kind of dropping the bullets.
Into her palm,
and you're going, right, there's a silver bullet. She switched them.
Yeah.
And then the camera on the hand tells us that she's now mid-form, I guess you could say.
Yeah, she's definitely looking a bit dishevelled.
Yeah.
And then she reveals the real legend to the house.
Yeah, she's got sideburns as well, so it's not just her hands. She's got like a bit more hair, scraggly hair and sideburns. And I was bored by the legend.
I'll be honest, it probably took the second watch to catch it properly, but basically he has the legend wrong. It's not whoever owns the house that the Count wants to kill. It's the Count wants to kill the last ancestor of the original bloke who killed him. That's why they've lured Jim back to the house. And once he's killed,
the Count
will turn back into human form. So. Yeah. But this raises a lot of questions. how long have they been married? So she is Mrs. Werewolf, as I said.
Yes, yes.
How long have they been married? Were they married at the time he was killed by the ancestor hundreds of years ago?
Or it could be one of those occasions where, you know, when you fall in love with prisoners, you're pen pals for a while, and then you get married. It could have been that she's just writing letters to this wolf in the behind the fireplace.
So he's been a wolf since then, sleeping in this coffin, but he wasn't always down in the cellar. He was put there probably by her. We don't know if Grandad was helping reluctantly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So The girl, she was a red herring. Granddad, we don't know really. And that's it then, right? So now all of these stories are going to end in that sort of way where you don't really find out exactly what happens next. You get to the twist, and then this one for me, there wasn't really a twist because it was just somebody saying. I mean, the werewolf, that was sort of like you saw
a twist in terms of who was the target.
Yeah. And how he got there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a twist. It wasn't a twist.
Yeah. I mean, he's left screaming. The camera pans in on him as she presumably approaches him to kill him.
Yeah. Well, we see her. We see her shadows kind of get nearer, don't we? So.
But he is actually the strongest candidate for actually dying out of all these stories, I think.
Yeah, because it happens right then and there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't know, as you say. It goes back to the train carriage then.
So and he goes, so that's what's going to happen to me, is it? And he's kind of a little bit disbelief, and he goes, where are you going? Where you're getting off at Bradley, but then where? And he goes, oh, I'm off to Ebrides. You could have a point there. He hadn't worked out that he were going to see this old house earlier on in that story, and he just anyway. So they said, so if you remember earlier when they deal the four cards, there's a fifth one that's if the next one, he says, right, if you want to avoid all of this, there is like a separate timeline that you can follow. So here is what this card is, and as he turns it over, it's death. So he's basically going to die. That's what they're saying. It's like you're eaten by a werewolf. Yeah, so you can do something about it now, i.e. not go to the Hebrides. But if you do that, you're just going to die anyway.
Yeah, death by werewolf or death by undisclosed method.
You're right, and that's it. So which one's the easier death? Well, Dracula's having none of it again. Is like, this is bunkum. he writes it off. And that is where we're going to leave our first episode. We're going to do probably three episodes on this, but we're going to come back to do the next one immediately. We'll be back on the train again, Damo.
Yeah, we're leaving our listeners on a ridiculous cliffhanger here. if they've hung on for a long time, please try and hang on a little bit longer.
Okay, so let's leave it there then, Damo. Okay, all good.
Absolutely.
Okay. Right.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Tales of the Unexpected.